with Modern Hippie Radio. Today I have with me Jeff Klein, who has not only written a book, Working for Good, but has created a company out of it. Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, just fine. I met you a year or two ago, I guess, when the book had first come out, Working for Good, and you've kind of taken it a step further than that. So I'd like to start talking about the book first and how that started and what it's all about.
Great. Do you want to ask a specific question or you want me to just riff on that?
Just riff on it, man. I mean, there's so much in the book. I mean, I've you know, you sent me a copy and I read through it. And, you know, before that, you sent me the ebook out with just like the basic principles. So, I mean, there's just so much to cover in it that I guess my first question is how did you get into this conscious capitalism movement?
Well, you know, it's funny whenever anybody asks the question of like, where did you begin or where'd you start? I flash on this comment that I'm drawing a blank now. I can't believe it. Carl Sagan. Thank you. Carl Sagan. I saw his face, but I couldn't. His name escaped me. Carl Sagan said, "You know what? When asked how do you bake an apple pie from scratch, he said, well, if you really want to bake an apple pie from scratch, you have to go back to the Big Bang, right?
Uh-huh. You have to create the universe.
Exactly. So the question is, you know, where does anything begin? You know, do we really know? You know, I don't know. You know,
yeah.
And actually, you know, I say that a little bit in jest, but really, I'm serious about it, and that kind of perspective and understanding is informing my work more and more all the time, which is, you know, we don't really know what's going on in a certain respect or why things are the way they are. And if we take that perspective, our orientation to what's going on becomes much more fluid, and we don't take everything personally, and it's not about us, you know, us doing something, but rather us part of a kind of an unfolding experience. And I'm finding that that's actually a very effective and call it healthy perspective and orientation that seems to actually foster more ease and flow and actually greater productivity, kind of coincidentally and ironically, because mm-hmm. you're not doing anything. It's not about me doing this or doing that. It's about me just kind of, you know, lining up with what wants to express itself here. So that may have been a little far out, but it actually is more and more my understanding and orientation, which does have, in a strange way, practical implications.
So it's kind of that whole concept of ignorance is bliss kind of thing. You know, it's more of that understanding that you really don't know anything, and so just work with what you've got.
Well, yeah, ignorance is bliss, I think. not to contradict you, I think ignorance is bliss. It tends to refer to, like, if you don't know what's, you know, what's going on or what's wrong, you can live in this little bubble of bliss,
right?
Whereas this is, you know, a slightly different I'll call it a slightly different level or a kind of relationship to the it's more of humility. It's going, you know, I might know a lot, I might have learned a lot, but I don't really presume to know what's going on here, because it's way beyond us, right? It's much bigger than we are.
Yeah, where they say, I think true wisdom is where you realize you know nothing.
It's something like that. There you go.
Yeah. I'm just pulling out the quotes here.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. The Buddha, I think I remember this quote about or from the Buddha, where he said, you know, we stand at the shore of a vast ocean and know a little bit about a few grains of sand on the beach.
Right, right.
You know, so
that's pretty much it.
You know, so, and I find that orientation, you know, leads to wonder and delight, and mm-hmm. it also opens for communications and connections with others much more broadly, because you're not coming from this fixed, hard, you know, I know the way things are, and this is what it is, and this is the way you do it. That that tends to separate more than connect. And when you come from, hey, I don't know, but I know that, you know, if I show up with wonder and delight and openness, then, you know, I might be part of incredible unfolding, you know, and it might be part of something, you know, that I can go, wow, that's, you know, that's life enhancing.
Right. Yeah, and that seems to be a lot of where, a lot of people are looking at our corporate structure and the way that corporations have kind of taken over the way things are running. And a lot of people just want to tear that down. But what you're doing is something that's much more proactive, is working with those companies that are actually run by real people who have concerns about the environment, concerns about social justice, and you're kind of guiding them toward being able to use their businesses to make those positive changes in the world, right?
Well, that's nice of you to say, and I would say in some respect that's probably true. My principal kind of business client right now is a company called One Coconut Water, and we're doing just that. And I consider myself to be my title, which has been kind of given to me over time, is activator, author, producer and process facilitator. And the activator is a reflection of the fact that for some reason or another, when I show up or I'm involved in something, things tend to happen. That's not always a good thing, but things tend to happen. And the author, obviously, I wrote the book, and writing is a big part of what I do. And producer means you roll up your sleeves and you take responsibility for things happening. But then process facilitator, the last one, is probably the most truthful, and that ties back to the piece that we were just talking about, how all life is an unfolding process, and it's a question of what your relationship is to it. A process facilitator is somebody, facilitate means to make easy, right? So I kind of tune into and recognize what is the process that has the potential to unfold here and support its expression. So to bring that to ground, what I'm doing with One Coconut Water, working very closely with the founders and the vice president of marketing, is they started the company with an intention to really serve all the stakeholders, and both through their product and their process. And so I'm working with them to help bring that to life more and more in ways that are reflect what's possible and to align with what they're about. So yeah, that is what I do.
Now, it seems though that a lot of the concern that I hear about businesses becoming more conscious is that there is that concern over the stakeholders, and the primary reason behind a lot of businesses is to make money for the
No,
stakeholders.
no.
Is it?
Hold on. I'm gonna.
That's what I'm saying. Other people are saying. I'm not saying
Yeah.
that, but that's a lot of people's concern is that it's you have to put so much energy toward that that it's really not possible to concern yourself with the environment or social justice or anything. But you're not really finding that, are you? You're finding that it is possible to do both, isn't
Well, I'm actually want to. The reason I said hold on is I wanted to clarify a word, which
Oh.
is stakeholders as opposed to stockholders.
Oh, okay.
There's a distinction there.
Right.
The conventional understanding is that the purpose of business is to generate a return on investment for the stockholders, right, for the owners.
Right.
Whereas the emerging conception of business and the conscious capitalism model is that you're looking to create value for all of the stakeholders. And stakeholders are different from stockholders. Stakeholders are the people or the entities that have a stake in the business, that are affected by it and that affect it. So, for instance, stakeholders in a typical stakeholder model in a business include the customers, right? Because they're using the product or service and they're paying for the product or service. Without them, you don't have a business, right? The employees or team members, right? Without their labor, there's no product or service, and they in return receive compensation in exchange for their labor. The vendors, right, or suppliers, if you don't have your suppliers to provide you with the raw material for making something, you don't have a business. Likewise, the people who sell your product, right, the distribution channels, if they're not there, you don't have a business. Your investors are one of you and a very important stakeholder. And then the communities that you do business in are an important stakeholder. That you're if you have a building, your building is located somewhere, and you know, you interact with people in the community, and the environment is kind of a silent stakeholder. Without the environment, with the raw materials, with the energy, with the water, etc., you know, there's no life, you know, there's no people, there's nobody, there's no context for business. So right. In the conscious capitalism model, all of these are valuable and important stakeholders, and you look to create value for all of them, including the silent stakeholder, the environment, right? So coming from that place, it's not about, oh, I've got to give back to the community, or, oh, I've got to, you know, make some contribution to environmental organizations. It's recognizing that it's an interdependent system, and that mm-hmm. if you don't serve in some way, and if you don't attend to all of those stakeholders, there's no business. And so that's a significant distinction. And the other, you know, kind of another piece of this is recognizing that, you know, what is a business, right? A business mm-hmm. is a social, it's a form of human social organization with a purpose, right? It's people coming together to do something together, to create something for the other people in the world, right?
Right.
You know, it's you can call it many different things, but that's what a business is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was also, you know, interesting distinction that you make about not giving back, but just giving, you know, from the get-go, as you make that part of your business. I mean, if you think back 7,000 years ago, before we used money for these things called businesses, it was just about, this is your service to your community or your village or your culture and stuff. You're working back toward that kind of concept, where it's just everything about your business is what you give to your community, and it's a constant output.
Well, you know, if you think about it, you know, every business has to give, we call it give in some way. It has mm-hmm. to create value, or it's not, you know, nobody's going to pay it, right? You've got to be creating value. You've got to be delivering something that people want and need, or there's no business.
Right.
So it's just and businesses do serve, right? They have mm-hmm. to, again, to be in business. So I think this is recognizing this, highlighting it, and making it more of the explicit focus of mm-hmm. businesses, because it is what, you know, it's why business exists. It's, hey, we're going to get together because there's a need, you know, that needs to be addressed, or there's something, you know, there's something that the society needs, or that people need or want, and we're going to find a way to create it or produce it in a better way. So in part, it's pointing to what already is, but then it's also amplifying that and, you know, getting people to recognize, hey, you know, money, profit is a byproduct. It's an outcome. Mm-hmm. from doing the right things.
Yeah, and I think we've lost sight of that in large part. And it's good that, I mean, I see it coming back very much, especially with what you do and other conscious capitalism motivators throughout the country and the world right now. But it seems that a lot of people have that concept that business is about making money. And that's, you know, was really highlighted in the 80s with the whole Me Generation and everything. But it seems that we're getting back to that point of being more conscious about what we're doing, that money is the byproduct, as you said, is a tool that we can use to do what we need to do. But what we need to do is start coming together more as a community and realizing the value that we offer to our community and the people that work with us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, I think a lot of people, you know, have focused on and are focusing on, you know, money as the main thing. But I think more businesses are started for other reasons, and that money is one of the reasons. It may be mm-hmm. one of the purposes, but it's not the sole purpose or even right. the main purpose. I mean, people start businesses because they're turned on by something, right? They're excited about something. They're passionate about something. Or mm-hmm. they want the independence, you know? They don't want to work for somebody else. There are lots of reasons that people start businesses. And making money is typically not the only or even the number one. It's, you know, that's what we see. And those people who are focused on money, you know, I guess you could say a lot of Wall Street and the financial services industry certainly become more and more just about money. than right. it is about providing service. I mean, I've talked to a bunch of friends who are in the investment business, and you know, many of them said are just totally turned off by Wall Street, because Wall Street used to be about, I mean, it's always about making money, but it also was about providing capital for businesses to grow with, right? Which is providing a service to society, right? If there's some important businesses, you know, from car companies and trains and infrastructure companies, they need capital to build, right? They've always needed it. And Wall Street was about providing that. Well, now Wall Street is really almost all about a game, right? It's being played by computers and computer programmers of how can we make the most money, you know, every half a second of every day. And it's not about, funding companies and serving society to a considerable extent. But because that has such a large impact, it distorts our understanding and our perspective on what business is overall. You know, Wall Street is certainly not all that business is about. It's not even close.
Right. Well, one of the things you say on your website is you believe that the process is the product. And you explain it more on the website, but can you tell us about what that means to you?
Well, you know, from my experience, you know, what a company does is really important. It's meaningful. It matters, you know, what you're producing in many ways. But the way that you produce it again, given that business is a form of social, you know, human social organization, given that most people spend most of their waking hours in their adult lives working, right? Mm-hmm. How we work together is going to affect who we are as human beings, the quality of our lives, the quality of our health, you know, more than anything else. And so the process, what I referred to that is, how are we working together, right? If we're coming together in this organization with a purpose, how are we treating each other, right? How are we relating to the stakeholders? Mm-hmm. If we address that how, you know, we're going to have a profound effect on the nature of our, you know, lives and our world. And similar, the one related to this is, I'm really found that the who, right, the who we work with, the who we work with and how we work with them is more important than what we're doing. Because, and I say this because knowing that if we have aligned values and principles and practices and we're working, call it consciously, we're only going to do something. The what is only going to be something that reflects those values and principles and practices. So leading with the what, oh, I'm going to create this new, you know, great environmentally oriented business. That's great. You know, that's great. But if you're, you know, plowing through or tearing people up or treating them like garbage on the way, how much better is the world going to be? I don't think so. So if we start with the human beings and how they orient and how they work together and how they relate to the stakeholders, including, you know, the environment, the community, employees, we're going to end up with a much more life-enhancing, you know, system overall. So that's what I mean by that.
Yeah, and one of the things you also say on the website is that capitalism and business are on the threshold of a what you call a paradigm shift. Uh-huh. Is that more what you're talking about, that kind of interdependency in working with other people and how you work with them, more than just the what?
Absolutely. I that's a big part of it. I mean, the conscious capitalism model is based on four principles, which really relate to this process orientation and you know, who we're working with and how we orient to business. And the four principles are purpose, right? Recognizing that every business has a purpose beyond return on investment, right? You got to be doing something, creating some value. Secondly, is the stakeholder orientation that I spoke with, recognizing that the business is a system of interdependent, interrelated stakeholders, and by creating value for all of them, you create a healthier, more sustainable, more resilient business. And then third is conscious leadership, is recognizing that, you know, businesses is started by and called facilitated or led by human beings. And the level of awareness and embodied practice of those human beings is going to have a profound effect on the nature of the business. And you want leaders who are not at all about me, 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 but who are serving the purpose and the stakeholders, right? And then, the fourth is a conscious culture, which is something that the leaders play a huge role in, is, you know, what is the culture of the organization, both internally and then with its stakeholders? You know, is it a culture of fear, or is it a culture of love, right? Is it a culture of dominance, or is it a culture of empowerment? And you'll find that the, you know, businesses that really embrace this perspective, you know, which means people, right, who embrace this perspective and build businesses from it, tend to cultivate trust, you know, within their business and within their stakeholder ecosystem. And they tend to support learning, growth, and development, and empowerment in the people, you know, that work with them and for them. So this is what is emerging. And these, you know, right. And in some respects, it's just plain common sense. And the best businesses throughout time have operated this way, you know, at least had this as part of their DNA.
Yeah. Now, I mean, watching the news today, though, which I try not to do as often as possible, but, you know, you see what's going on with the last few years, with the bank bailouts and the car bailouts and a lot of the things that it seems that corporate America is doing, just this really horrible stuff. But obviously, from your vantage point, you see it in another way, and that there are more companies that are becoming more conscious about what they're doing and how they're integrating themselves into their community. Can you speak to that a little bit, and how people can get away from that image that they keep seeing on the news and open up more to the fact that we are becoming a more conscious community?
You know, that's a good question, Steve. I tend to be an optimist, and I look for the positive, and you know, when you tend to find what you look for, right?
Right, right.
And, you know, the news doesn't spend a lot of time pointing to, you know, positive things, because we have, as a species, we have a something called a negativity bias, right? Which is we look for, you know, dangers and threats. And if you look at it from an evolutionary perspective, it makes sense, right? Because what's threatening could kill you, and so you want to be tuned in to the threats so that you make sure that you don't get taken down by them. So it's, you know, it makes sense. So one is, you know, to look for it, and you know, you can come to, you know, to the consciouscapitalism.org website and begin to be exposed to stories of companies that are doing things different. And that website will be built out more over the next few months, and more stories. And you can, you know, well, you know, read the book and Working for Good, and, you know, come to my website, workingforgood.com. But there are lots of places. If you look for, you know, who's doing great stuff, who's doing business differently, they're out there.
Who are some of the ones that stand out to you within the last year that have just done things that have really just stood out for you and say, wow, those guys have got it going on?
Well, you know, I hesitate for a second, because, you know, I've been involved in the conscious capitalism movement for the last 5 years, and worked very closely with, you know, several companies or people who run companies. So, they're, you know, Whole Foods and John Mackey and Walter Robb, who are the co-CEOs. You know, people have lots of opinions and perspectives on Whole Foods. From my, you know, 5 years of direct involvement with them, I'd say they're an incredible company that is pioneering in so many ways in this context, right? I've spent quite a bit of time with Kip Tindall and others at The Container Store. The Container Store is a company that, you know, for 30 years, this is how they do business. Patagonia, you know, really to a considerable extent comes to business from this perspective. Life is Good, Bert Jacobs. Doug Rao, former president of Trader Joe's. You know, he really led Trader Joe's to become a company with this kind of orientation. So you know, they're various, mostly bigger companies, older companies. There are lots of small, you know, young new companies like One Coconut Water, you know, Tom's mm-hmm. Shoes, and others, who have who embody this orientation, a lot of the elements. There, and they are, many of them are what we'd call, you know, unconscious conscious capitalists. In other words, they're conducting their business this way, but they don't have a language for it. And, right. you know, they don't necessarily realize this is what they're doing. And, you know, many of them, because they don't have a clear model or the language, don't see the holes in what they're doing and don't mm-hmm. recognize the opportunities for, you know, elevating and, you know, more fully embodying their aspirations and their values. And I think as the ideas get out there more and more, and they, you know, they connect with this model and other companies and, you know, leaders who are doing business this way, they'll very quickly see the opportunities for more deeper integration and embodiment of their, you know, of their values and principles. And I think we're going to see an explosion of companies over the next, you know, over the next decade that are doing mm-hmm. business this way. Again, in the natural products, environment, and other areas, companies are, there are lots of amazing entrepreneurs and teams building companies with this kind of orientation. And as they learn from each other, they'll take it to a whole other level.
Yeah, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, which I'm sure you will, but it seems that one of the reasons that a lot of these companies aren't getting more visibility is because they have a more sustainable growth model. You know, they're not seeking to completely saturate the market like Coke does or Budweiser or something like that, but are more about just doing the right thing on the level they're comfortable with. You know, like Trader Joe's, for instance, is has a great reputation, a wonderful reputation, but they have a very small growth model. They'll only open a few stores a year, and so they're not completely saturating everything like other companies are. They're not as known or as highly profitable, you might say, or visible as other ones. Is that a fair speculation?
You know, I'm hesitating for a second. Probably yes and no. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there's greater and greater, call it demand, right, for businesses to function this way, both from, right. you know, consumers. I mean, the data from Cohn and Duke and others and Edelman's good purpose studies, you know, are showing that this is what people are expecting from business more and more. Mm-hmm. And likewise, employee engagement studies are showing that employees are expecting their companies really care about them and mm-hmm. care about the communities and the environment. So there's kind of a, you know, increasing demand from the marketplace, you could say.
Sure.
And then at the same time, you know, more and more people are starting businesses coming from this orientation. So there's a convergence of those things. And mm-hmm. I think that you're going to see more and more, you know, visible expression of it. I mean, one example that comes to mind is of a big company that's really heading in this direction is Pepsi, right? Mm. Their CEO, Indra Nooyi, is dedicated to creating what she calls a good company. She wants Pepsi to be known as a good company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, has really established, you know, purpose as a driving force. Has started a new division called the Global Nutrition Group, really looking at mm-hmm. delivering high-quality nutrition at an affordable price to the, mm-hmm. you know, the billion or so people on the planet who don't have access. And very serious about this, you know, investing, you know, billions of dollars in it. So I think you're going to see just a trend in this direction overall.
Right. Now, do you think, I know there's a quote you have by Roy Spence that regards this economic situation as an economic Armageddon. Obviously, we've gone through a recession and we're still seeing the effects of that. Do you think that maybe having people lose their jobs or get another lease on life is helping them to find this type of consciousness again, to say, you know, when you lose everything, basically, you kind of start anew. Do you think it's helping people to reorient themselves to what's really important in their business and how they operate their lives? Does that make sense?
It does. So, yeah, so you could say that necessity is the mother of invention, right?
I guess so, sort of. But also, you know, I mean, it's kind of, you know, we've been operating out of this regular capitalism for quite a while, which has put such an emphasis on money. But now that we're having an economic crisis, where I think a lot of people are looking at what's really important, again, the service, the interdependence, the community, the congruity in what it is we do and how we do our things. Do you think, is the economic situation helping that, I guess is my question?
I would say sure, absolutely.
You're an optimist, so why not?
Well, I am an optimist, and also recognize that, you know, as people see the negative, now, you know, to some extent, it's creating a negative perspective on business overall, mm-hmm. but I also think it provides a backdrop for the distinction, for the difference that really matters to be apparent. I mean, you see the way that, you know, abusive, you know, crony capitalism is, you know, negative and detrimental, then you can see that this other way of doing business is really, you know, different and meaningful. And, you know, you again, this is with these polls of you know, consumers and others will support companies that serve society in ways beyond, you know, producing their products and services. That hasn't waned, you know, during this economic crisis, that people still have, you know, trust and confidence in companies that are serving, and they will patronize companies that are serving. So I do think it provides a backdrop for the difference to be more apparent.
Right. Now, something else I wanted to ask you about, and you may know nothing about it, so if you're not comfortable answering it, I can obviously cut it out. But I've heard a lot of talk lately about a resource-based economy, moving out of the monetary-based economy and looking something to, you know, looking at something more tangible that realizes the real value of what we're doing. Have you heard anything about that, or do you have any opinions on it?
Well, you know, gosh, it was 1981. I did some research for Bob Rodale, who was the chairman of Rodale Press. He died in 1984 in a bus accident in Russia, or 1985. But I did some research for him on social and natural resource economics. And there were people like Herman Daly is one that really stands out. I think he's in Louisiana, who was in the Odoms. There's these ecologists, economists named Odom, who were doing work on that, you know, way back. You know, this is early 80s. So I think there's been thinking about that for a long time. You know, I don't know that it's imminent in the near term.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be interesting, but a huge transformational process to convert, you know, the current system to another one anytime fast or soon. But
sure.
I don't know where that is, and I don't know what it would take. But we're talking, you know, the money-based, you know, capitalist economy is the, to me, my understanding, it's the largest, most pervasive social system on the planet, right? I mean, there, you know, there's 1.5 billion Christians and 1 billion or so Muslims and, you know, 800,000 Buddhists, whatever. And they're, you know, essentially almost every person on the planet is connected to the capitalist system. So it's a huge, complex system, and mm-hmm. changing it to another, you know, kind of medium of exchange is not going to be something that happens faster.
No, I don't think it's going to be something fast. But the more I hear about it, the more it's I just see, you know, I'm more about, and I think you're there as well, realizing that for a long time we've seen money as value, and in actuality it's not. Money is a piece of art that represents value.
That's right.
And I think that the more we can come to understand and appreciate that again and realize that the true value that we have. And it's my hope that with this economic situation that we have, that people are being able to open their eyes again and say, you know what, I may not have a lot of money, but I'm here with my family. I have a house over my head, you know, weather's good, whatever. But realizing the real value of life beyond just the money.
Well, so I want to pick up on that. I love what you just said, and actually suggest that beyond the natural resource kind of foundation for the economy, is that there's a, you know, call it a human resource, or really just a, you know, life enhancement, you know, life enhancing. Of aspect that's way more important than money. And you know, one of the things that I look at, and you know, I think the community, the conscious capitalism community look at, is, you know, what are the different types of value, right? There's social value, you know, social wealth, there's intellectual property wealth, there's, you know, financial wealth, there's the wealth of the environment and its ability to preserve, to promote and support life. You know, all of these are critical, essential, you know, types of wealth that are essential to our, you know, life and perpetuation of life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, so yes, I do think that there's going to be a shift in that context, which is a little different from, are we going to, you know, establish a natural resource rather than a monetary-based economy?
But it does seem that, I mean, because I live a pretty simple life, and I think most people, if they're frugal and a bit on the cunning side, can carve out a good life for themselves for most everything that they need. But it still comes down to the power, you know, gas, keeping the lights on, cell phone, healthcare. But even food you can grow yourself. But those seems to be the main ones that where money is still always going to be essential as long as we're living into this type of paradigm. I guess, is there any way, and I've heard about Tesla and that kind of thing, of him offering free power, and do you see it ever going to that way of saying, you know what, these are now basic human elements. In order to live in this civilization, we need these things. Is there a way to get those resources into a different economic bracket, I suppose?
Well, there are two things, and I'll go back to, if I may, to your kind of the first piece, and then maybe come to the second one. The
Sure.
first one is just the question about the role of money, and you know, money, as you said before, is a kind of a piece of art. Money is an intermediator, right? It represents value. So in a planet, you know, an economy with 7 billion people, then, you know, cities with tens of millions of people, you know, you can't carry all your value around with you all the time, right? So, you know, we need mediums of exchange. We live in an exchange-based, you know, social, I'll call it a social system. And, you know, one of the things that I recognize is that the early capitalists were probably the first people that saved seeds, right? And they recognize that, okay, if you save seed, you can plant it again, and then it'll grow and produce more seed. And then what happened is they, you know, as more they grew more and more seed, they needed to store the seed, so they build buildings. So, well, if you're growing, you don't have, you know, you can't build the building and grow. You need, and it's a, you know, bigger enterprise than one person can do, so you need other people to do it. And, oh, here, I'll give you some seed for your time to help me build this building. And again, this is just a story, right? But it's probably not that far-fetched. And the idea of exchanging, you know, one thing of value for another thing of value is something that has served humanity for, you know, 10,000 years or more. And it, now we're just living in a kind of a more complex version of the same thing. But having, you know, having something that represents the, you know, the value and gives us, you know, an opportunity to exchange value, that's not, hey, Steve, can you write this for me and I'll fix this for you? You know, we may not, you know, we may need, there may be more people involved in our chain, right? And so we need something to represent the value and move value, move value around. So I don't know if I think it's actually a very effective mechanism, right? And mm-hmm. and I haven't analyzed it in you know great depth, but my sense of it, my experience with it, and the fact that it's been with us for again at least 10,000 years says to me it's something that's been you know time tested and stands the test of time, at least in you know this context. So I do think that it's going to persist in term, and so that's the one piece. And then the second one is, are certain call it resources or addressing certain needs going to be recognized as basic human rights and something that people should get just by virtue of the fact that they're alive? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know the answer to that question. You know, on some level, we have to recognize that, you know, we're part of some process that's way beyond us. We don't know what this is all about and why we're here and where we're going. We have some sense that, you know, species tend to adapt to perpetuate their persistence through time, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you want to reproduce, you want to live in your own life, and that's not a you, it's just the organism, right, wants to live, and the organism wants to pass its DNA on, you know, into the future, and the species wants to do the same thing, and we adapt, you know, physiologically, biologically, it takes, you know, quite a while for that to happen, although arguably, you know, it's still happening. Apparently, intelligence, IQ, you mm-hmm. know, there's this thing called the Flynn effect, where every decade, human intelligence and measured by IQ, you know, goes up some percent, meaningful, right? Meaningful percent. It has for 50 years or something. So it's, you say that we're, you know, we're becoming more intelligent. So the question is, does providing, you know, access to certain resources or fulfilling certain needs serve the whole, right? Does it serve the perpetuation of life? I don't know the answer to that question, but I think it's part of what we need to look at. I do think that as we evolve and become more conscious and recognize how we function and what's going on, you know, and what serves life, I think we find more and more peace, more and more collaboration. You know, 200,000 years ago, you know, life was brutal. You know, I think 1 in 4 people died a violent death at the hand of another human being. You know, that's not the case anymore. Right. You know, it wasn't that long ago that we had slaves. You know, there are slaves on the planet, but, you know, they're few and fewer, and slavery is outlawed everywhere. You know, not that long ago, women couldn't vote, right? So I think we're making huge progress in the social domain. Whether, you know, have everyone having access to certain things is, you know, part of what serves the whole. I don't presume to know that. But I think it's an interesting question.
Yeah, I think it's a step along the way. You know, it's something that we're looking toward, you know, and that's looking at the history and seeing what we've gone through, like you said, overcoming slavery and you know, suffrage and that kind of thing is a great example of how we are evolving as a species. And I think we're at a time now where I'm grateful that people like you are doing what you're doing and opening people's eyes to becoming conscious about what they're doing in business. And from here, it's just a matter of saying, where do we want to go as a society and start putting our energies there? And what you're incorporating in the things that you're doing are I think, a very, very vital part of that, of reconnecting people with how they're treating one another on a personal level in doing business and going from there. Now, when you get clients, how do you go about doing that?
Well, I'll answer that in a second. You said something. Okay. You said something really meaningful that I'd like to just pick up on, if I may.
Sure.
First, is you said, you know, we can, you know, kind of ask ourselves collectively, right? How do we want to conduct business, and, you know, where do we want this to go? That, I think that's part of the evolutionary process and part of the increasing, you know, call it conscious awareness in the context of business, is that we can even have this conversation, right? We can even think about, like, okay, what is business, and how does it, you know, serve, and how might it become, you know, even greater, you know, in greater service to us as a species and to life in general. And I think that is exactly the conversation that's happening now. It's part of the conversation that's happening now, rather than just the assumption that, oh, business is about making money, and you know, do whatever you want, make your money and move on. It's like, no, that's not actually what we as a whole are saying. We're saying, no, business is people coming together to serve, and, you know, society is what gives business its right to exist, and, you know, society is asking for more than just go ahead and, you know, make money. It's asking for consideration of, you know, the environment, the community, you know, et cetera. So it's a really exciting, exciting time to be in business.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think that's the way that it's going to happen. That's is us just starting to talk about these things, you know, and once we start talking about them, they move from an idea to a shared idea. And then from there, they can manifest in the physical world. But that's going to take time for anything that we're going to create. But talking about it and sharing these ideas is the first step to get there.
Hear, hear.
So for you though,
so for me, how do I get business? You know, I would say mostly through relationships and word of mouth. You know, I don't promote or advertise. I'm not, you know, looking for lots of business. I have great clients and great projects that are ongoing and long term. So I either, you know, generate you know, new businesses or you know, connect with clients and business through, you know, through relationships and introductions and word of mouth.
Right. So for most people who want to get some of your expertise and find out more about what you're doing, the best way to go about it is by getting the book, right?
That's a good way to start. Absolutely.
Fantastic. And they can go to workingforgood.com and get it there.
They can.
And it's also available pretty much everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, and all that. Yep.
Fantastic. Well, I'm about out of time. Was there anything else you wanted to add before we took off? Anything that we wanted to put a button on?
No, just really appreciate the conversation, and I really appreciate your book. Real delightful read and lots of inspiring ideas, very, you know, compatible with my own thinking, and love how you're looking to pioneer this kind of awareness in the realm of marketing. Thank you for that.
Well, thank you. It kind of came to me. I'm glad you read it. Glad you enjoyed it. I'm actually going to be retitling it. It's going to be How to Survive an Estrellarian Mind Meld. I figured that had a little more panache than the McAllister Code, so we're going to go that way.
That's great. Well, thank you, Steve. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
Have a good day.
You too.